Hi, I'm Tara. I'm an associate solicitor in the medical negligence team at Boyes Turner. Today I'm talking with my colleague, Ben Ireland, who's also an associate in the medical negligence team. Thanks for joining me today, Ben.
Hi, Tara.
It's Action for Brain Injury Week this week, and so Ben and I are talking about the work we do supporting our clients who've suffered life-changing brain injuries and our experiences dealing with these cases. We know from our clients that a brain injury can have an often irreversible impact on a person's physical, psychological, and cognitive abilities, as well as affecting their families and social relationships. The starting point in any clinical negligence claim, including those relating to brain injuries, is to consider the legal tests involved in bringing a claim. Ben, would you be able to talk us through that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, as a starting position, any healthcare professional will owe a patient a duty of care. And it may be that the standard of care has fallen below that which can be considered reasonable, which is assessed with reference to what a body of medical practitioners would consider to be acceptable treatment. If we can establish that there's been a breach of duty, then we need to be able to link that to the injury that somebody has suffered from. And this is called causation. We need to be able to show that on a balance of probabilities, it is as a result of the substandard treatment that somebody has actually come to harm. Now, in brain injuries and in many areas of medicine, it can, of course, be quite hard to demonstrate that. And the causes of the injury can be multifactorial, which is why in clinical negligence, you are able to still bring a claim where you can establish that the harm caused by the negligence has made what's called a material contribution to the occurrence of that injury, and that the extent of that contribution cannot be distinguished from any of the other, perhaps non-negligent factors.
Thank you. And we know that brain injuries can affect both adults and children. What sort of issues have you come across in the cases you worked on involving children?
The main injury that we see and that we work with at Boyes Turner for children is called cerebral palsy. It's a reasonably common condition. It affects about one in every 400 children. But there are occasions where the reason why a child has suffered this type of brain injury is as a result of substandard care. And this can often be related to the child not having enough oxygen, often right towards the end of pregnancy and in the lead up to delivery. And that's why children are very carefully monitored in that stage of pregnancy to ensure that they're not showing signs of distress. And if they are showing signs of distress, we sometimes see that there are delays in the delivery being expedited. And of course, that prolongs the period of damage that the child is suffering from. And that can cause, unfortunately, a permanent brain injury. We also see with some of these children evidence of them having perhaps restricted growth much earlier in pregnancy, which is often an indication for why they should be delivered perhaps before mum goes to full term, because those children in particular can be quite susceptible to this type of injury. Children who have cerebral palsy, obviously it varies in its degree in terms of its severity, but it can be an extremely severe condition where that child is going to need multidisciplinary input with every aspect of their life and will have significant care needs for their entire life. And it's really important for those families that we're able to access for them the kinds of therapies and support which we are able to do through a compensation claim. And we can work quite closely, actually, with our colleagues in other departments in relation to those that support. These injuries are not necessarily physical. They can, of course, present in terms of behavioral conditions as well. And I won't steal from it, but there was recently a rather excellent podcast done by my colleagues Richard and Julie about children who suffer injuries resulting in them presenting on the autistic spectrum or presenting with ADHD that I think would be helpful for people to check out as well.
And we've also had cases where children have suffered brain injuries as a result of infection, including meningitis. Could you talk about what meningitis is and the cases where negligent treatment has resulted in a brain injury?
Yeah, so meningitis or encephalitis, they're infections which cause inflammation either to the brain membranes or to the actual brain themselves. And unfortunately, as a result of that, the compression of the brain tissues onto the skull can cause the child again to have long-term brain injury in sometimes similar ways to how a child will present with cerebral palsy. One of the difficulties with meningitis is it can often start with quite non-specific symptoms such as high temperature, sickness or a headache, and then it can also produce slightly more telltale signs such as a stiffness of neck or a rash that doesn't fade or a dislike of bright lights. Of course, these things can also be produced by other conditions, and unfortunately we do see this contributing to delays in children being diagnosed with this type of condition. Meningitis and encephalitis, they are very treatable if they're caught early enough. But of course, if they're not caught early enough, they can result in quite significant injuries. We actually work reasonably closely with a very excellent charity called Meningitis Now, who do a lot of good work in terms of the awareness around meningitis and brain infection in children and in adults, and a great resource for anybody who is suffering with that condition or has had a family member suffer with that condition. And I think the thing to say, we touched on already, is in any of these cases, once we can show that there has been negligent treatment, we're able to release an interim payment, which can get some practical help on the ground for these clients and their families. And Tara, I think you'd be well placed to talk about the sort of benefits an interim payment can bring for an injured person or for their family.
Yeah, so interim payments can be used to implement private care regimes to help support parents who probably up until that point have been providing all the care for their child. They can also be used to fund therapy such as occupational therapy, speech and language therapy, and physiotherapy. Assistive technology is another ever-advancing area, and items such as eye gaze can be purchased to be used at home and at school. And in school, our child clients may also need support by way of teaching assistance, and their education, health and care plan might also need to be amended just to make sure their needs are being met in school. In some cases, the interim payments can be used to purchase an adapted and more suitable property with enough space for wheelchair access and storage. Or the funds could be used to enable a family to move into a larger rental property so that after the case, they can then make a decision about if and where they want to move.
Yeah, and I think coordinating that support and managing those funds and getting that kind of support, it is a real challenge for families. And we're very lucky, actually, at Boys Turner, we're assisted in the work that we do through the other teams that we can rely on to help support these families. And I think, Tara, you can probably talk about the sort of work that they can do as well.
That's right. So exactly as you say, outside of the clinical negligence claim, our clients might need support from other legal professionals, such as specialists in court protection work, to consider how to manage these funds. And that could include the appointment of a deputy. They may also need help from a special educational needs solicitor to help support with their education, health and care plans, and also from a community care team to help with certain issues that can arise in the local authority, such as transitioning from children to adult services. And exactly as you say, we can work with our colleagues at Boys Turner to provide the necessary advice and support in these areas.
Yeah, and I think it's also probably worth mentioning as well that even when we're investigating a claim and before liability may have been admitted, an important part of what we do is to work with those injured people and their families to signpost them to the support services that are available before those interim sums can be released. We're very pleased to support Headway, which I know we'll go on and talk about a little bit later. But we also work alongside White Lodge, which is a really fantastic facility for children who've got these sorts of brain injuries, these sorts of really quite complex needs. And they provide great facilities for therapy space. They provide great resources for parents who've had to become carers. And we do a lot of work with them. They're a really great charity to support. I'd recommend anybody check them out if they've got any family members or friends who've got children with those sorts of disabilities. We talked a lot about children, and I think Tara's probably also worth talking about the sorts of cases we see more in adults as well. Are you able just to expand a little on the sorts of things we see for adults?
Yeah, so I've had cases relating to delays in diagnosis of brain hemorrhages and specifically subarachnoid hemorrhages. So one of the issues we consider in these cases is whether there were any red flag or warning signs that were missed. So common symptoms of a subarachnoid hemorrhage include a sudden or a severe onset headache, which can be described as a thunderclap headache. Neck stiffness and light sensitivity are also common symptoms. in these cases, sometimes we also have to think about whether any brain imaging, such as CT scans, have been reported correctly, and whether there should have been any other investigations or procedures, like a lumbar puncture. And in some cases, we see clients who have experienced more than one bleed, and so we also have to consider whether there were any opportunities to provide treatment to prevent future injury after that initial bleed happened. Ultimately, the consequence of a delay in diagnosis can be life-changing, as we've said, and can result in ongoing care needs and therapies for the rest of someone's life. And in some cases, a delay can have tragic and fatal consequences. Ben, I know that you've had experience dealing with cases relating to diagnosing brain tumours.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, brain tumours can affect both children and adults, more commonly adults. There's about 11,000 people a year are diagnosed with a brain tumour. Symptoms suggestive of a brain tumour are often quite vague and non-specific, particularly early on. You can have things like fatigue, headaches, nausea, and then that can progress to more significant symptoms such as behavioural changes, or one side of your arm may be paralysed, you might have some vision or speech problems. And the difficulty with brain tumours is, because they are so non-specific, this can lead to delays in referrals being made, due to the nature of symptoms that they produce. And sometimes we also see that even where a referral has been made, and similar as you were talking about with the brain hemorrhages, you will have some form of head imaging, but that imaging may not have been interpreted correctly, because unfortunately there are other conditions, other diseases, which can produce similar features to a brain tumor but actually aren't a brain tumor. And of course, with any type of cancer, the earlier that you can have it diagnosed and go for treatment on it, the better your outcome is likely to be. And unfortunately, of course, we do sometimes see these cases resulting in people passing away who perhaps, you know, that could have been avoided. Similarly to when we talked about the children and the interim payments, I think also probably worth saying how interim payments can help these sorts of adults as well who have these kind of injuries. And I'm sure you can expand on that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of overlap because the needs may be quite similar. So in the context of adults, interim payments can be used to help fund private care therapies, but including psychological support. They can be used to purchase any equipment a person might need, as well as funding adaptations or the purchase of a new property. Some of our adult clients may no longer be able to work, or not in the same capacity that they were able to before their brain injury. And so as part of their case, we have to think about if there's been any loss of earnings or a loss of pension. And an interim payment can just help alleviate any financial strain if the person is out of work as a result of their injury. Our clients, and also the clients of our personal injury colleagues, can find support in charities, as you've mentioned, Ben, and we touched on Headway. And their campaign for Action for Brain Injury Week is Every 90 Seconds, which focuses on the statistic that every 90 seconds, someone in the UK is admitted to hospital with a brain injury, which is quite staggering when you break that down. So thank you very much for joining me today, Ben. It's been great to talk more about the cases you've had and what you've experienced, and how important it can be to consider a medical negligence or a personal injury claim.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we hopefully highlighted today is, you know, brain injuries, they are very scary. They're very difficult for the individual to process, as well as their family. And they very often have long-term consequences, life-changing consequences for those individuals affected. I hope that, however, we can show that there is some support available. And certainly for me, and I'm sure for you and the whole team, being part of that support process is really what motivates me to do the work that we do. And it's part of the reason we get out of bed in the morning, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. If you or your family member have experienced a brain injury and have questions about a medical negligence or personal injury case, please do not hesitate to contact our team at Boys Turner so we can talk about what your options are. You can find details on our website, boysturnerclaims.com. Also, please remember to subscribe and follow our podcast if you want to hear more from our team at Boys Turner.